Hi, this is Bill Lindeke for the Streets.mn podcast, conversations about transportation, public space, and urban design in the Twin Cities. This week's podcast is another in our string of city council candidates, a conversation with Chris Brogan, who's running for city council in Minneapolis's 4th Ward. The 4th Ward covers the top of North Minneapolis along the northern border of the city before it turns into Robbinsdale and Brooklyn Center and reaches over to the Mississippi River. Chris Brogan is... was the former housing and economic director for Mayor Sharon Sales Belton, and she still works in development, and she ran a small business for many years in the Victory neighborhood of North Minneapolis. She's running for city council in Ward 4, currently represented by City Council President Barb Johnson, and her campaign is focused on neighborhood foreclosures, affordable housing, and economic development. Chris and I sat down last week at The Warren, which is a little art space, on the corner of 44th Avenue North and Osseo Road. We talked about how she discovered this part of the city, which is a funny story. We talked about the challenges of starting an Italian restaurant in Minneapolis, which is a long story. And we talked about how the internet changes development debates, often for the worse. So I hope you enjoy the conversation. We're talking about Linden Hills right now. We'll get to Ward 4 in a second.
Yep.
Yeah, what were you telling me just about Linden Hills?
So what I'd like to say to people, when people say to me, why can't we be like Linden Hills? I always caution people about wanting to be like somebody else. Uh-huh. But I say to them, if you take a look at 43rd and Upton, and you remove the retail, just take those little buildings out of there, what you will see left is apartment buildings. As far as you can see, you will see apartment buildings. That is why that node works so well, because there's lots of people who live close by. Mm-hmm. They have then single family housing, and they have a great location. They have all those other things. But the reality is they have a lot of dense housing right by it.
Yeah.
That makes all the difference.
And you say dense housing, but you don't really mean like skyscrapers.
No, I mean three-story buildings.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And lots of little buildings that have studio apartments in them.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Lots of space where people who over time have all lived with a variety of incomes, a variety of jobs, a variety of skills, but they all liked being there because they were close to the retail, they were close to the lake, they were close to whatever. But that dense housing really has made the difference for that community.
And it's a lovely place to walk.
And it's a lovely place to live.
Down 44th Avenue,
mm-hmm.
or 44th Street. It's
44th Street. Yep.
And it's just, it's got like what you're saying, it's got a really nice fabric of old shops from back when the streetcar used to run through there.
Yep, because the streetcar came right down.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, Southwest Minneapolis had streetcars before anybody else.
Uh-huh. Yeah. There's
a reason.
Yeah. So
but it's lovely.
Let's talk about where we are now.
Sure.
Right now we're at this place called The Warren, which I'd never heard of because I am from about as far away from Twin Cities as you can get from here. But on the corner of Osseo Road and 44th
Avenue North.
Avenue.
Yep. We're all avenues on the north side.
On the northwest corner of Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
Here in the Victory neighborhood.
Right.
And Chris, you're running for city council here, so maybe you could introduce yourself and Ward 4 to our listeners who might not
sure.
be familiar with it.
Well, I have lived in the neighborhood for a couple years, but the reason that we're here really is because my husband and I opened a business here.
Mm-hmm.
And we opened a business here. We first looked at it in 2001. We signed a lease in 2003, and then, unfortunately, it took 2 years to open, but we opened in 2005.
Can you tell your story of how you discovered it? I read that online, and it sounded really cool.
Yeah. I had a car. It was summertime. It needed its air conditioning fixed.
So what year was this, though?
2001.
Okay.
And I came. I asked a friend of mine if he would repair the car for me, because that's what he does, and it's a hobby. And he said, no, but you could take it to my guy who fixes my car. And I said, okay, where's that? And he said, well, it's right around the corner from me. His name is Nia. And I said, in North Minneapolis? You want me to go all the way to North Minneapolis? He said, I don't care where you go, but if you want your car fixed and a good job, go to Nia. And so I did. And I was sitting waiting for my car to be repaired, and across the street was a little retail building. And it looked kind of forlorn and dead, and I couldn't figure out why there was nothing happening there. Because as a person who has been living in the South Side, spent most of her adult life in the South Side, those little buildings would be full of all kinds of activity. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was rather strange. So we kept bringing our car to Nia, and he kept fixing it, and I kept looking at the building, wondering what was going on.
What kind of car was it?
Well, it was an old Cadillac, and it had a it had air conditioning problems.
I bet you'd be thankful that the Cadillac wasn't too reliable.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So everything worked out great. I talked to some friends of mine, and he said, "What's the story with that building?" And people said, "Well, you know, it's got a problem landlord, and it's not bringing viable business to the community anymore, and the whole part of that neighborhood is just kind of down on its luck in the commercial district." And I said,
"Oh, what corner is that, 44th?
It's 42nd and Thomas."
Okay, how far away from that is?
We're here, well, 3 or 4 blocks. Uh-huh. It's not very far away, and so we kind of pursued it. We went and met with the landlord, and he said that he was selling the building, and he had a buyer, and they were supposed to be closing on this deal. And so we said, okay. And he said, "But why don't you talk to the prospective buyer?" And I said, okay. So we did. And he said, "Well, you know, I'm going to put a convenience store in that building. But if you wanted to put your restaurant down, further on down in the building, it's about 9,000 square feet, the size of the building." He said, "You know, you could do that." And so we talked about it, and we decided if we were going to put a restaurant in that kind of building, we really wanted the corner. We wanted the visibility. We wanted to be there. And I was okay. So he said, "Well, after I buy the building, maybe we can talk again." And we never heard from him. Mm-hmm. And another reason, I was up in this part of the world and drove by the building and saw that nothing had happened. I thought that was really curious. So I tried to get a hold of the prospective buyer, whose number had changed, and couldn't find him. So I got a hold of the old owner, who I thought was the old owner. And he said, "No, I still own the building. Something happened. Who knows?" And I said, "Well, we'd like to come and talk to you about that restaurant idea again." So he said, "Okay." So this was now 2003. Mm-hmm. So it's about a year and a half later.
It's like a Sherlock Holmes mystery.
It's a long, silly story. But so he was willing to lease to us now because he still owned the building. And so in 2003, we signed a lease with him. And then we started the process with the city. And our story is not unlike a lot of small businesses trying to establish themselves in the city of Minneapolis. And at the time, you had to go from one department to another department to another department, and you'd get conflicting stories. And even if you were in the same department, you would get a conflicting story. So we went to the... And I should just interject here that I had worked in the mayor's office.
Right, I was going to ask you.
Yeah,
about that.
And I had been a housing and economic development person for the mayor, and part of my stuff was the planning department and zoning. So I thought I pretty much knew the ropes.
Yeah, if anybody would have known,
it would be me, right? But unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. So we. We went to the licensing office, and I was very specific. Do I need to know anything? Are there special rules that are going to get us in some kind of trouble? You know, if we have beer and wine, are we going to need more parking than maybe if we just had a restaurant?
The answer is yes.
And you know, the answer was, we've resolved all of the issues. Really? Uh-huh. That's great. So then we went over to the planning office, and we showed them our plan, and we did all this stuff, and she said, "Oh, no problem. $50. You have your little site plan. It's great. When you're ready, come back and we'll do the paperwork." Okay. So we spent the next couple months pulling all of our stuff together, and went back to the zoning office or the planning office to get our site plan approved. And the person we had talked to originally was no longer there. So we had a new person. And she's looking at our site plan, and she said, "Huh, looks like there's a big sidewalk in front of your building." And I said, "Yeah, there is. Isn't that great? We can have outdoor seating." And she said, "Well, it looks like it's 8 or 10 feet wide. And I said, yes, and maybe it's 12 feet wide, I don't recall. And she said, well, then it's not a storefront. I said, well, it's a storefront. It's got six stores, six doors, big windows. If you ask anybody, they're going to say it's a storefront. Well, storefronts have to be up to the sidewalk. They can't be back from the sidewalk. And I said, I don't get it. So there were rules. So I checked with the attorney for the zoning office, and she said, yes, there are rules, and yes, you're set back too far. There was some disagreement on the number of feet, but we exceeded it regardless. So they told us we had to do a full site plan review. Uh-huh. Well, a full site plan review had been $350. But wouldn't you know, we came in on the 1st of December and it was now $500. Uh-huh. So we went from $50 to $500.
Yeah, that sounds like a car repair story.
Yeah,
too.
Exactly. So we were upset for a number of reasons. First of all, site plan takes a long period of time. You have to go to the planning commission, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Plus, it was an unexpected cost. So, okay, we'll do this. So we went back, had to do a full site plan review now. So we have to measure everything. We have to identify parking. There were a number of steps that took a long time. And then we had a new planner who said to us, oh, and by the way, you're going to need a parking variance. I'm like, I don't think we need a parking variance. Yeah, because, you know, there's this many storefronts. And I said, but that's not how it works. So she and I discussed it at length. And finally, I just asked for her supervisor. And we were able to avoid having to get a parking variance, which would have cost us another $350 plus more time. Mm-hmm. So fortunately, we were able to get it back.
Too,
exactly. Imagine. So yeah. Now we're from May, now we're in December. Mm-hmm. And we think, you know, in December, we get to get started, but no. You can't get started until you go through this planning commission process. Mm-hmm. So we didn't get to the planning commission until the end of January. And then there's more time. So we really didn't have all of our approvals and everything so we could start actually our work until March. And from then, it was all downhill.
Downhill good or downhill bad?
Downhill bad.
Oh, I see.
And so we had an architect who did our kitchen plan, and this was a space, it was a rough space. So we literally had to build the kitchen, build the bathrooms, build the dining room, all on our own dollar, which we were willing to do. That's part of our business plan. We had money for that. And so we did that, and then we ran into the city. This is where it really gets bad. They wanted some fire doors between the restaurant and the bathrooms, mm-hmm. because it was a different storefront. We finally got past that problem. We took the plans to the health department, and the lady at the plan review said, oh, are you having beer and wine at your Italian restaurant? Well, yes, we are. Oh, well, then the men's room needs to have a urinal. Now, remember I told you I talked to the licensing guy and he said there was no problems? Well, I guess this was a problem. So we had to go back to the drawing board. We had to lease more space, mm-hmm. because that made the men's room much larger. And we had to have the architect redraw the plans for the bathroom and do all that. Fine.
I kind of don't even want to go down the urinal road that you just described. I'll just take that for what it's worth right there. So now you're drawing up new
right.
bathroom plans.
We got all the plans done. And now, as part of our site plan, someone had come out and said that there was too much of a lip between the sidewalk and the sill for the front door. Mm-hmm. And we said, but that's not our fault. You guys lowered the sidewalk. So every time they come out and rip up the sidewalk and replace the sidewalk, it drops. So you can see, I'm sure you've seen this in St. Paul, you mm-hmm. get these buildings with these funny lines on them because the sidewalks and streets drop. Well, you're going to have to put in a ramp. I'm like, a handicap ramp. Yep. And you're going to have to go down the side of your building, and you're going to have to get an architect to design this, and you're going to have to get a permit, an encroachment permit, because you're going to be onto the sidewalk now. Mm-hmm. So back to the architect. And every time we go to the architect, you know, it costs us money.
Yeah, for sure.
So he says, I don't think this is necessary. And I said, well, this is the downtown. So he draws up this thing, and we get all prepared. Luckily, this is the only lucky thing that happened. The city was replacing some sidewalks. Uh-huh. And the sidewalk guy was out there. And we said to him, isn't there enough room for us to just raise some concrete so that instead of doing this whole big expand of the, you know, permit and the ramp and everything, can't we just raise up the sidewalk a little bit? You guys are replacing a lot of stuff here. Can we do that? And he said, sure, no problem. So one guy at the city thinking. But again, it put us behind some more and cost us some more money that we didn't need to pay. But we did it anyway. And so we got everything done, and then we ran into the water problem with the city. Seems that the landlord, who wasn't that up and up, hadn't been paying water bills. And so the city came out and shut off the water. And for whatever reason, the water bill was like $4,000. So we had no ability to pay this water bill. And the property owner wouldn't pay the water bill. So they shut down our project. So we were shut down for, I don't know, 6 weeks, something like that. Mm-hmm. Suffice it to say, it took until June of 2005 to finally get the project done. Because when inspectors would come out, depending on the inspector, they would give us conflicting stories. For example, we had a plumbing inspector come out, and she had to get up on the roof. Now, she knew why we were there.
How old was that building? I'm curious.
1928. Okay. So, and it's just a single-story building. It's not that big a deal. Mm-hmm. But she came out, and she was supposed to go up on the roof to check this piping. And when she got there, she was obviously pregnant. And she said, well, I'm not climbing a ladder to go up there. And I'm thinking, why are you here? We had a plumber who was supposedly licensed in the city of Minneapolis, who none of our plumbing could pass the inspection. So they had to come out and redo plumbing. We had, they had low pressure gas here, and our stoves, of course, take high pressure. And so we had to get all new piping and a special meter. All of these things take time and,
yeah,
and
sure.
money. So we opened, finally.
Did that first meal taste really good?
It was an awesome day.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it literally took 2 years. Uh-huh. We signed our lease in May of 2003, and we opened in June of 2005.
And the name of the restaurant was?
Papa's Restaurant and Deli.
Okay. And you kind of, it was pizza, spaghetti,
Italian
place.
Yeah, red sauce. Yeah, beer and wine. And our we had two goals. First of all, it was my husband's restaurant.
Yeah.
So, and he was running it, and he had 30 years of restaurant experience. So, you know, he kind of thought we maybe knew what we were doing. And my goal was community development.
Uh-huh.
Because there really wasn't anything nearby there, and there still isn't, a lot of food or anything. So my deal was to really build that kind of place that people want to come to and hang out with their friends and meet new people. And I think we were successful at that.
Uh-huh.
And my husband had really good food. And I think we were successful at that. What we couldn't ever anticipate was what was going to happen next. And what happened next was the Great Recession, a failure of a housing market, and a real failure of our housing market. In that the fourth ward for 6 years running has been number one in housing foreclosure.
Oh, yeah.
We could not have anticipated that.
Yeah. So how far down does the fourth ward go, for one thing? And then tell me how that's affected kind of daily life here.
Well, the fourth ward goes all the way down to Lowry.
Uh-huh.
Okay. It is actually, it is the entire planning district of Camden. Mm-hmm. The reason it has gotten so large, and it also takes a little part of Jordan and down into Willard Hay, from Queen over to the city boundary all the way down to 26th. So it's a very, geographically, it's a large ward. Mm-hmm. But what has happened in North Minneapolis over the last 20 years is we've lost 30,000 people.
Yeah, I actually see that.
30,000 people.
I read every article about the demographics of Minneapolis, and mm-hmm. You know, one of the reasons that the city has been declining in population is because of shrinking housing size and decreasing population here mm-hmm. in this part of North Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. But there's, you know, more people downtown, so there's this shifting in the city from up here to downtown in mm-hmm. general.
Yeah, and part of the problem that we've had is we have not, as a city, done a really good job of figuring out where those people went. Because they didn't leave here and go downtown.
No, they certainly, I was about to say that.
That's not the demographic that went downtown.
No, it's not.
When we first started having the foreclosure problem, a lot of those properties that were foreclosed upon were rental properties, single-family rentals. We lost 3,000 people that we'd have no idea where they went because they were renters. Mm-hmm. And we have kind of a difficult time in Minneapolis really caring about renters.
Well, yeah, that's true in St. Paul, too. That's part of the issue with how we do public engagement and how we reach out to voters and to citizens and try to include people, and even on commissions, like the Planning Commission that I'm on, there was an article last year about how a very small percentage of people who serve on commissions are renters, even though the city itself is really high. Mm-hmm. I bet this ward is over 50% maybe, in most of the city. I think it's something like half.
Yeah, and we do have a lot of renters here. We don't have a lot of multifamily rental property, uh-huh. which then creates a problem. Because, yeah. you know, there's a tipping point at which time, if you have too many single-family properties that are rental, the neighborhood balance changes. So it's one thing to have 5 single-family houses that are rental on a block with 20 houses. And it's another thing to have 15 rental family houses on a block with 20 houses.
It's the same thing I heard about student housing issues around St. Thomas University mm-hmm. in St. Paul.
It changes.
Mm-hmm. And basically people don't take as good care of their properties. Or
yeah, and you know, and I don't like to, I understand what you're saying. I don't like to make those kind of blanket statements
because
you know what it is. But it is true that... renters like being renters for a reason. I can come and go as I please. Somebody else is responsible for taking care of stuff I don't want to take care of.
Yeah.
I can come into my apartment. I got my space. That's all I have to worry about. I don't have to worry about a roof or windows or, you know, paying the water bill or whatever. But when we have people who rent houses, we can have a number of things happen. If we have good landlords and good management, things can be okay. If we have good tenants, even if it's a bad landlord, things can be okay. But if you a bad landlord and a bad tenant, ugh, it's bad.
Yeah.
And if people don't have experience or interest in caring for a house and a yard, it's evident.
Yeah.
Whether you're a homeowner or a renter, yeah. right?
Well, I was in a situation like this in the North End in St. Paul, and I was that person you're describing. I'm just not that really into yard work, and I would often let the hedge get out of control or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't know what my neighbors thought of me.
But and I think that's the tipping point that I'm talking about. So it's one thing if it's one guy on a block, one house on a block.
Yeah.
But if it's half the block, it begins to make the block look not like a place I want to invest my money if I'm buying a house.
Uh-huh. So that's kind of what's been happening in Ward 4 here.
Yeah.
Over the last 5-10 years is what you're seeing?
Yes. Yeah. And so it's really, we've come to this place where it's really at the tipping point. And you can feel it on blocks where there are a lot of rentals.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do we do about that, Chris?
Well, what I would do about it, which is what a lot of communities across the country do, is we can do an overlay and limit the number of rental properties that we're going to allow on single family blocks.
Uh-huh.
And there are really strong economic reasons to do that. Because the more rental you have, the less homeowners you have, the values really start to shrink. And that's true. So in West St. Paul, for example, you can't have more than 10% of the single-family houses on a block rental. In Northfield, it's 20 to 25%. Mankato has it, Duluth has it, lots of places just in our state have it, but also lots of places across the country have it, including condominium buildings that are FHA insured. FHA does not allow for more than a certain percentage of the units in those condo projects to be rental, because they know if you get too many rentals, the value, the homeowner value slides. So I'm all about putting an overlay district and talking to the community to explain what an overlay district is, talk to them about how we can control some, you know, future rental escalation. I'm very concerned right now because we know that every weekend there are national companies coming into our city who are buying up 10, 20 housing units at a clip. They don't care. They just come in and buy up these single family houses.
Are those the people with the signs on the poles that say we buy houses for cash or whatever?
You know, these are national companies. They're investment firms. They're real estate investment trusts. They used to buy, you know, warehouses and commercial buildings, and now they're buying up single family housing. And so what they'll do is they'll then turn around, you know, throw some paint on them, get through the licensing process, and rent them out. And they'll be managed by national property management companies, which means we can't call them in the middle of the night and say, you know, that tenant of yours is causing havoc on our block. So that's my concern, is kind of that national speculator presence. We have a lot of speculators here already who don't care, come in, and just put tenants in.
This is an interesting conversation. Not the one that I was expecting, because this isn't on your website, this kind of policy. This is kind of what happened in St. Paul with the student housing, which is a little bit of a different issue. But the basic problem there was that demand is real high for student rental properties, and students are paying a lot of money, and the neighborhood has the same thing about the tipping point. If you have a whole block where it's 50% or more students, especially younger students, tend to have certain habits that a lot of families don't like very much.
Right.
And so that's what they did. They passed this ordinance limiting the percentage of student housing that could exist in, on certain blocks. But I think one of the problems with that I see is it's a little bit... It's a regulatory approach as opposed to, is there a way to, so the regulatory approach has a few issues. One, it might grandfather in certain areas of the city as being kind of written off as kind of rental, disinvestment areas, right? Because you can't really force people to sell property that they already own, right?
Well, you can't, but you can prevent more from happening. And then, on top of it all, you can create incentive programs to say to the landlords who are already there, we'd really like to buy you out.
And here's the other question I have. Mm-hmm. How does this affect renting costs in the city of Minneapolis? Because there is kind of a rental crunch, right? There's a lot of demand for people renting houses in general, even though there's really cheap interest rates. And I think this might be the new sort of economic era that we're in, is that people are really looking for places to go and where they can rent space, cheap rental property.
You know? Right. But, you know, as you said, and I agree with you, there are renters who really need to be in other kinds of rental opportunities, but they don't have that opportunity here. So in North Minneapolis, we have very few multifamily rentals.
Right. So that's what you'd like to see.
I'd like to see more. I have a client who recently completed a 46-unit apartment building on Broadway. And it was full as soon as we completed the project.
Mm-hmm. Broadway and where?
Broadway, Upton and 27th.
Okay.
So close to Robbinsdale. It's built with Affordable Housing Trust Fund money. It's built with money from MHFA, and it's built with low-income housing tax credits.
MHFA equals...
I'm sorry. Minnesota Housing Finance Agency.
Okay.
And we use low-income housing tax credits. Great program, great plan, beautiful building, and it provides really affordable rent for people, you know, working class. That's North Minneapolis. It's the working class. It's always been the working class. And, you know, I suspect that it will always proudly be the working class. Mm-hmm. So that property was polluted. It's on a transit corridor, which is why it's really important that it got built there.
Which transit corridor?
West Broadway.
Okay, yeah, sure.
It's a, you know, it's the 14 bus line. It's easy to get to Penn Avenue. It's easy to get to Lowry. So those are all major bus corridors.
Yeah.
46 units and an assortment of 2 bedrooms, 1 bedrooms, and studios. And before the project was built, the land produced about $500 a year in property taxes.
And now?
It's over $36,000.
Oh, that's great.
So it helps build our tax base, which helps everybody in the city, because if we're providing tax base on the north side, it alleviates some of the tax pressures for everybody else, mm-hmm. right? We have a budget. We need to make so much money to be able to take care of that budget. And if some properties aren't paying taxes, everybody else has to pay more.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I get that.
Yeah, and so the great news about that building, however, aside from this tax part, is that it stabilized a lot of individuals who needed to have secure housing that was affordable to them. And so when they moved in, our combined income was $700,000 a year. And 1 year later, the combined income of the residents there was $900,000.
Wow.
And that's the power of stable, affordable housing.
Yeah, and so you used to work for Sharon Sales Belton, the mayor.
Yes.
She was 2 terms in office.
Yes.
This is a little before my time paying attention to city politics.
No.
Because her last year was 2001, I guess.
Right? Yes.
Right around the time you started trying to open a business.
Right.
What did you do for the mayor at that point?
I was a policy aide on housing and economic development, and so while I was there, Sharon and a number of council members were under pressure about doing something about affordable housing. You know, it's all about cycles. And so there weren't a lot of affordable housing options for folks, and it was a really big deal for a number of neighborhoods in the city. And so part of my policy area was to work with these council members and develop a funding source, which we did, and we created the Affordable Housing Trust Fund. It was supposed to be funded at $10 million a year that was going to be used for affordable housing.
And tell me the story about what happened to that.
Well, it was there, and then it got changed with the new administration, as things always do.
Yeah.
And so it is still there, but it is much smaller. Probably about $6 million, depending on the year, $6 to $8 million. And some of the rest of that money, then it comes from community development block grants mm-hmm. that come from the feds. And so that money gets siphoned off and it has gone to other projects in the city. But we still have the money there. It's a good thing. It helps developers who need development, you know, administrative costs, et cetera, to be able to do these projects. So there are funds available to still help, but not as healthy a funding source as it once was.
So that would be a priority for you if you got elected.
It would be, to make sure that we have that. The other projects I worked on, some of them I liked, some of them I didn't. One project that I worked on was the riverfront.
Oh, yeah.
And I particularly liked doing that because prior to coming to work for Sharon, I was a commercial real estate broker. And I worked on a project with the Resolution Trust Corporation. The Resolution Trust Corporation was a federal program when all the savings and loans tanked in our country.
We're going back in time.
So in the 1980s, we had the savings and loans, and they were deregulated and got themselves into a whole bunch of trouble, mm-hmm. and they fell apart. And the federal government took all the property that were part of the savings and loan, and then they had across the nation, and then they had to sell it. And to the Fed's credit, they set up this Resolution Trust Corporation and gave it a time limit and said, got this much time, get those things off our books. And so one of the things that was on the books was the Milwaukee Road Depot.
Oh, yeah. yeah.
And all the land that went with it.
Is it all the land that went to the east? Because there were all these train tracks there.
There was all the train tracks and all the parking lots.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so it went from like 3rd over to maybe 11th. Wow. I mean, it was big.
I wish I could have seen that.
It was amazing. So my team came to the city of Minneapolis and said, we'd like you to buy this. We think you're the best deal. You're the best bet for us. And fortunately, at the time, the city council and the mayor at the time were very progressive.
Which mayor was that now?
And you know, I was just trying to think.
I'm quizzing
if it, no, it was, you know, I think it was 2003. So it was either just before Sharon became mayor or when Sharon had just become mayor. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to remember. I keep trying to think what the date was, but...
You mean 1993?
I mean 1990. I'm sorry. Yeah. Misspoke. 1993. So it was either 93 or 94. I can't remember. So it was either either or. But there was a lot of interest from the city in the Central Riverfront.
Sure.
So the city bought it for $2 million.
That sounds like a good deal.
At the time, it probably seemed like, are they kidding me?
Oh, my God.
Because it was polluted. It was polluted with diesel fuel. But at that time, there was the development of these microbes that were eating diesel fuel. So, yeah, just we had pools of diesel fuel that we pumped out. And then we had these microbes that went in and cleaned up the rest of it. And, of course, the depot itself was a huge challenge. It had a lot of pollution issues itself, from diesel fuel to lead paint to all kinds of stuff. Plus, the train shed had to be preserved because it was historic.
Sure.
So what does one do? So over the next couple years, the MCDA, at that time, Minneapolis Community Development Agency, worked to try and, you know, find the right partners to do development. At the same time, one of our mills had burned down.
Yep. What year did that happen? In the early 90s? Or?
Early 90s, late 80s. Yeah. But there was a... Must have been... No.
Email.
Yeah, because it was after... Sharon was mayor, so okay. It was after 93.
Right.
Anyway, the Historic Preservation Minnesota History Center called and said, we'd really like to save that. And Sharon said, yeah, I'd like to save it too. So those kinds of things. Thank you, darling. Don Fraser was from 1980 to 1993, and Sharon was from 94 to 2001.
Okay.
So somewhere in that 93 to 94 period is when, so it was Don and Sharon. So they decided they wanted to try and save this mill. So they shored it up, the city shored it up, and tried to hold on to it. So when I came to work for Sharon in 1999, all of this became part of my portfolio.
Wow.
So it was really fun having been kind of on the front end when the city bought it, and then to be on the back end when it's really starting to get its development going.
Is it kind of fun to walk around that area now?
It's great.
Remember what it was like?
Yeah, it is. And the really the fun part about it was when I was a teenager, I used to take the train from the Milwaukee Road Depot out to Western Minnesota to visit my family.
I'm really jealous.
So I had the experience of being actually able to get on the train and take the train and head out to Western Minnesota and then to sell this site to the city and then to be able to work on the final development of the site. It was great.
Can we talk about transportation a little bit?
Sure, I'd love to.
Two things, I guess. One, we were talking about street design and walking just a second ago before we hit record here. And then the other one is about transit and what are the challenges and do you think, you know, what can we do to, what are the problems with transit in this part of Minneapolis and what can we do about it?
We have little.
Yeah.
So that's a big problem.
Uh-huh.
Part of my, when I was at the city, was working on some of the development stuff that went along with the Hiawatha corridor. So I was really lucky to be at the city when that light rail was built.
Yeah.
It was awesome. I mean, it's just an amazing experience.
So tell me about your philosophy on transit-oriented development.
My philosophy is we ought to have it.
How do we do that, though? Because Hiawatha doesn't have a ton. I mean, I think people can easily overlook some of the stuff that did go in around there. But.
Well, and you know, I see it. I see it every time I drive down there. And I was just there the other day. And so I see it. Mm-hmm. I see all the apartment buildings that have been built.
Yeah.
I see all the retail that has come. I see all of the, you know, interest in owning a home in the area. I see all the young families who are coming there. I see all of that happening because that transit is there.
Absolutely.
Those things that are happening around there would never have happened without that light rail happening there. Mm-hmm. And I remember when they took out all the houses. So, and they were going to put in a highway. And then they stopped the highway. And then we had to wait, I don't know, 20, 30 years for the light rail to come.
Yeah.
But it is amazing. And I had a friend who's now deceased, but he had a development company. And we had lunch one day, and he was telling me about doing development along the Hiawatha Corridor. And he said to me, I've never asked for a single dime from the government. And I do all my developments with my own money. And I said, you know, I get that. And I understand what you're saying, because you bought the land and you built the building and you did it with your own dollar. But you never would have done it there had it not been for the LRT.
Yeah.
And he not only did one project, he did four.
Wow.
Because of the LRT, he would never have developed along there had it not been for that transit.
Well, what could be done to make it even better?
There or anywhere?
There and anywhere. And I wanted to ask you about your Botano philosophy. I don't know if that hits on this side. Or there were two route options.
And both of them were bad.
Yeah.
In my view. I was at a meeting one day, and county commissioner from St. Paul on the Central Corridor, and I can't remember his name, and Peter McLaughlin were making a presentation about the importance of transit and transit-oriented development. And so I listened very patiently, and finally I just raised my hand, and I said, if this is true, if what you are saying is true, that if we build transit and all this development happens because of it, then why are we talking about this ridiculous little transit thing in North Minneapolis? Why are we not going down West Broadway or going down Lowry and hooking up with Washington and heading into downtown? Why are we doing this? And the response that I got was, it's not my district. Mm. And I said, and therein lies the problem. From my point of view with Botano, originally it was supposed to be the bus rapid transit.
Mm-hmm.
And then someone, I don't know who, thought, well, maybe we should have light rail.
People like it more.
People like it more. It's a little sexier. It's a lot more expensive. But it's an investment that reaps great reward.
Mm-hmm. Sure, absolutely.
It is not like just putting in a bus.
Or it's not just like putting in a Viking stadium.
It's not like putting in a Viking stadium, which will, you know, no property taxes there.
Yeah.
So when I watched this whole thing, and because it's, you know, it's further south, and I didn't participate that much in that discussion for a variety of reasons. But when they started talking about taking this thing through the park and just totally missing North Minneapolis, I was like, you gotta be kidding me. What are we going to get from that? What will North Minneapolis get?
Nothing.
So nothing.
Yep.
So it's going to go through the park. It'll go to Robbinsdale.
Yeah.
Have a stop. That'll be great for Robbinsdale. They'll just go crazy building. And then it'll come down and it'll turn on 55. So if you live along 55, if you're in Harrison neighborhood or the lower end of Willer Hay, it'll be great. Your property values will probably go up.
Yeah, they sure will.
But the rest of us will be left hanging once again.
Yeah.
And I personally feel that there has been, for a very long time, total disregard for the people who live here and the needs of our community. So we talk about revitalizing West Broadway. Well, there is nothing that you're going to do to revitalize West Broadway at any level that's really going to make a difference unless you have some kind of major transit happening there.
Mm-hmm.
it's not going to change. People have too many choices. People have too much access to their car. They're just going to get in their car and drive somewhere to go. Yeah. We have been trying for a couple generations to revitalize West Broadway, and it's not happening.
And the city, all those buildings were built around people walking.
Exactly. And the street
except
park.
For the new strip mall part. But
I know. It's horrible. It's just horrendous. I look at Broadway, and it just is like, ugh. It's horrible. And I think people, you feel different about it. It's not comfortable. It's not comfortable to walk. It's hardly comfortable to drive. It's just unpleasant. I have a vision of West Broadway with an LRT running down the middle of it that, in my mind, totally changes West Broadway.
But how do you feel about a streetcar system? That seems a little more plausible, right?
Well, it does, except, you know, I'll be dead by the time that gets there.
Well, I'll be dead by the time any of this stuff happens.
But, you know, they're going to do it down Central Avenue. Uh-huh. They're going to do it down the Midtown Greenway. They're going to do it down Nicollet. I mean, all of those things are going to get done before it gets done here.
Oh, I agree with you there, too. Yeah.
The fact of it coming here, it's so far away. We have an opportunity to do LRT and do it now and do it right. Uh-huh. And I see an opportunity for some eager beaver lawyer and a few interested citizens to put a stop to the debacle that will happen if it goes through the park.
Yeah.
It's just, it's ridiculous. It's insane.
Uh-huh.
It's just insane. And so from my campaign point of view, Barb Johnson says it's not worth it to bring it into the city. The extra cost isn't worth it to bring it into the city.
Uh-huh. And so you're saying, well,
it is worth it.
Yeah.
Because it is worth it. It has been worth it on Hiawatha.
Uh-huh.
It's obviously worth it on Central Avenue, University Avenue, the Central Corridor. That, it's worth it. Having the trolley cars coming down Central Avenue is worth it. Everybody knows if you have the trolley car on Nicollet, it's going to change everything. They're willing to spend who knows how much to get rid of a Kmart and open up that street because it's worth it.
I think you could get a lot of volunteers to destroy the Kmart for free.
I have a wonderful drawing of the Whittier neighborhood and Lake Street at Nicollet. And it has all of these things on it and has the Kmart. And down in the corner, there's a little guy on a bulldozer.
Mm-hmm.
And that drawing was done when Kmart was built.
Yeah.
There were people wanting to tear that sucker down the day that it opened.
Yeah.
So, it was a different time.
Yeah, certainly.
Different
was.
Mindset.
Talk to me. One of the things you mm-hmm. said you wanted to chat about was this technology, the role technology plays in local politics.
Right. So I'll just give you a really interesting example. I have a client who wanted to build a small apartment building, 38 units, on Penn Avenue. Transit-oriented development. This particular client builds on transitways. Because they have folks who live in these buildings who are the working class. You know, they're making $7 to $13 an hour. They typically don't have cars. If they do, they're not necessarily always working. And, you know, it's a problem with cars, right? So
cars cost a lot.
Cars cost a lot of money.
Over $8,000 a year on average in the U.S.
Right.
That's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money.
You don't need one.
Exactly. So when working folks are on bus lines, it makes it a lot easier for them to get to and from work and wherever else they need to go. So this particular client builds on transitways. And they had been asked by the neighborhood to look at this site. And so they did. And so they worked with the neighborhood. And the neighborhood liked their plan and supported the project. Because, you know, you always need neighborhood support when you go and...
Yes, you do.
Not something. Aware of that. Then the client talked to the council member, and the council member said, great. Neighborhood likes it. I like it. It's not supportive housing. It's just housing for folks. The client then worked with the city, planning department for a year, putting their project together, taking it back out to the community, going through things and really getting it together. And the site is 5 vacant lots. 3 of them I think the city owned and 2 were owned by the county because of foreclosure, tax forfeiture. So the client needed to have exclusive development rights. This is another requirement when you're looking for funding. People want to make sure that you have some kind of site control. So in the city of Minneapolis, we have a thing called exclusive development rights, which the city hands out to whomever they think they want to have do development. Mm-hmm. And so the client, so that's great, worked through the process, and everything's been through the process. All the process working. And it was on the CD community development agenda on a Tuesday. And on Friday night before then, someone who didn't live in the neighborhood, and that happens to be in the 5th ward, and didn't live in the ward, decided that she knew what was better for everybody. And so she started a little Facebook campaign to kill the project. And her point was, when is the North Side going to stand up and say, we don't need any more supportive housing projects? This isn't supportive housing, but that's okay. And literally, what she was saying is, this is a project that Chris Brogan's client is going to bring poor people to our neighborhood, and we have got to stop it. Mm-hmm. And by Monday, she had hundreds of people going, we don't need those kind of people here. We don't want that kind of housing. We And by Tuesday, we were off the consent agenda, and the committee decided that the city needed to do an RFP for those project, for those lots.
Mm-hmm. What's happened to them now? I'm curious.
So what happened was they sent out an RFP. My client responded, as did one other individual. And so now it is back to the neighborhood for them to review the RFP, and we'll see where it goes.
But right now they're still empty.
They're empty lots. They're producing nothing.
Yeah.
And this particular individual who started this little campaign has said, I'd rather have vacant lots than have those people. We don't need that kind of housing. And that's the power of Facebook. Mm-hmm. But I would hope that in the future we can use it to better purpose than this. But, you know, from my perspective is the city had a process. We followed the process. How do we get derailed by one person who decided that they had an agenda?
Well, in a way, it just is a more kind of instant and speeded up thing that would happen anyway. Like, usually, I picture the 1950s. There's a long history of people being resistant to change.
Absolutely.
In neighborhoods.
Right.
And there's a really good movie about it that you can watch for free online about the color barrier. So, if you go to the mm-hmm. 50s or 60s, there were actually, lines in cities where, person of color, you could not live on the other side of that street. Or people
happened here.
Right. So,
happened all over Minneapolis.
Back in the day, neighbors would call each other mm-hmm. on the phone using rotary phones and
yes,
stuff.
Yes.
No cell phones. But right. Now you can do all that in an mm-hmm. instant, and so it's a lot faster and more kind
yep.
of volatile.
Which, if neighborhoods, if people who are affected, directly affected, decide they don't want a project, I get that. We have to work together then to figure out how to do the project.
Uh-huh.
But this was a person from outside the neighborhood.
Yeah.
A person from outside the ward who decided that she knew what was best for everybody.
So
it's an interesting time. I guess my point about this is the city's going to have to start taking a look at their process. If your process, go to the neighborhood, get support, go to the council member, get support, move on, that's one thing. If the process is going to get derailed because of social media, then we have to address that.
Uh-huh.
So if you're going to say there were 500 likes on this page, 600 on this page, the 600 wins, I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
I just want to know what the rules are.
Yeah,
Yeah. I just want to have the level
exactly
playing
what
field.
Happened. It's what's happening in St. Paul around this Buffalo Wild Wings that they're building.
Oh, yeah.
But there's two competing Facebook pages, one against it and a smaller one in favor of it. But,
yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, I suppose the Lex will probably end up in a similar position.
I don't think so. It's classy.
It's too classy for that.
Yeah, if it was a bar aimed at students, it would be a different story. But yeah.
Perhaps.
St. Paul local issues.
I do.
Well, great. Well, tell me why you ran and how your campaign's going, and then
sure.
we can kind of wrap this up.
Sure.
I think.
Sure. So here's why I run. Because I'm a community developer at heart. And because I love neighborhoods, mm-hmm. and I love Minneapolis. My husband and I moved. We chose to live here. He's from New Jersey. I'm from here. We had to choose, and we chose here. We've raised our family here.
New Jersey's nice too, you know.
New Jersey is lovely, and it was a hard decision. But basically, and I will tell you the exact reason. We believe in public education, and we believe in public school. And at the time, New Jersey was not doing very good in public education.
Yeah.
And here in Minneapolis, they were. Mm-hmm. And so that's how the choice was made. But my family has lived here since the 1880s, so this is not like it was a strange place for us to go. And so we came here, and we've been here for nearly 40 years. And I truly love what I do. I love doing community development. I just think it is the most rewarding job ever. I truly enjoy working with my clients. I enjoy working with neighborhoods to come to some consensus about what we can do to make neighborhoods better. And what I have seen, because I've lived in many parts of the city, is that the rest of the city is functioning and this isn't. We have very few businesses. We have many vacant storefronts. We have many vacant houses. And we have many vacant lots. And while the rest of the city has recovered from the recession, we have not. Mm-hmm. And I believe that when we cut the Vikings deal, we needed to cut a deal for North Minneapolis, and we didn't. And my concern about the Vikings is not only the $675 million that's going to cost us, but the development that everybody has been promised that will happen around the Viking Stadium will suck up every ounce of energy, and nothing will come here. Mm-hmm. That's why I think we have to have the overlay for the to protect our single-family homes. I think we have to work really hard to build our medium density on our transit corridors, because I truly believe that transit is the only way that we really get real development.
It's the way to maximize the potential of your city. You know, mm-hmm. This Minneapolis was built around these transit,
exactly.
transit-oriented lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the city wants to be. It doesn't want to be a place you drive everywhere.
Exactly. So when I hear from young people that they would love to live here, but they have to walk to a coffee shop, and by the way, there isn't one, that's a problem. I don't think we can attract people to come to our community when we have assets that they don't know about. We have great ability to get to the river. You can just walk right to it.
Really?
Yeah. It's
awesome.
I gotta
try that someday.
As you get downriver, it's, you know, ravines, and you,
yeah.
it's a,
I've biked
it's a haul.
I've there before. I biked to,
North some, Regional Park.
Yeah, it was someplace.
Yeah.
Someplace with a huge playground that was
yep,
crazy.
Yeah, North Regional Park. It's great. Very few people know it's there.
Yeah.
We have an interpretive center, a natural interpretive center, Kronig Interpretive Center. Beautiful. Doesn't get much use. But that access to the river is amazing. And we really need to build on that. We have a charming little creek, which I guess isn't really a creek. It's a runoff ditch.
Actually, that was one of my colleagues in streets.mn asked about Shingle Creek, and can that be like a mini creek?
It should be.
Yeah.
It absolutely should be. And right now it's overgrown with brush, and it looks like a mess, and it's awful. But why is it awful? Why can't it be wonderful like the Minnehaha Creek? Well, we got train tracks running by it. We got a recycling center right on top of it. We built bridges over it. It's awful. But it doesn't have to be.
Yeah.
It could be awesome and beautiful. And people, I take my grandson over there, and we can't even get to the creek. So he has to look at it and throw rocks from the bridge. So there are things that we can do. And that's what I'm talking about. We haven't had the opportunity through the leadership that we've had for decades that gives us those things that we need. We need to open up the creek. We need to have a library. The county promised us a library and then reneged on the deal and took our money and went away. We needed somebody from the city saying, no, we're getting our library. You promised our library, we're going to get a library. And so I think sometimes what happens when you take on additional roles, so instead of just being the council member from the 4th Ward, you become the city council president.
Yeah, you stop focusing on your...
Your focus changes, and it just has to change because that's the nature of the job. I'm interested in being the person who's interested in listening to the people who live here. You know, 74% of the folks that live here voted for the referendum that said if you're going to build a sports stadium, you got to come and talk to us about it if you're going to spend more than $10 million. And we never even had a community engagement meeting to discuss it. That's a problem. So it's kind of losing our neighborhood revitalization program money, losing, you know, our future to the Vikings, not getting LRT, being number one for 6 years in a row in housing foreclosures, and why? Why didn't we come up with something to stop it? We could have. There were things that other communities had done. We could be doing things to stop people losing their houses. And we do nothing to protect our small businesses.
Yeah.
And so ultimately, my small business went bankrupt. The tornado finally didn't hit me, but it hit enough other people.
Yeah, my friend had a house not too far from here. Mm-hmm. He was cleaning out his yard after that tornado. He lost a tree down.
Yep.
I think two trees, actually.
So, yeah, when the tornado hit, our sales just plummeted. And we couldn't recover. And we literally went bankrupt and lost all of our investment. And
probably lost a lot of your, it must have been sad.
It was. And I got to tell you, I've been outdoor knocking to delegates, and many times people come to the door and go, I'm so sorry about Papa's. Mm-hmm. Because it was a community place. It was not only hard for me, it's hard for the community. It was hard for my husband.
Have you ever seen the movie Do the Right Thing, by any chance? Mm-mm. You should watch that. It's about a pizza place in a kind of African-American neighborhood in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
It's a classic movie, so
I will check it out.
Yeah.
So it's really hard for us. And when you have a business and things are so public today, it's hard now for me to hear from or see on Facebook that I'm not obviously not qualified to be a city council person since I've lost my business. And that's the other side of the Facebook problem.
I did Google you, but I didn't read that. So where's your campaign at now, and what's the next step for you?
Well, you know what? We've got a great campaign. I have got awesome campaign workers. I have a team around me that is just dynamite. They're young and they're energetic, and they know that we need change here. Uh-huh. They know that they want to have a coffee shop and other retail, and that they want homeowners here, and they also know the value of having housing choices. So whether you're a senior citizen and no longer wants a single family house anymore and wants an apartment, to whether you're a kid coming out of college and you want to live in this neighborhood but you don't want a house, those are the kinds of things that new people to this community really want. And I've got to tell you, happily, I've been hearing from a lot of people who have lived here their whole lives saying, we need a change. So we're working really hard, and we're trying to stay positive because some days it feels really bad, especially when it's snowing in May. So now the sun is out, we're feeling more energized. Yeah, but I think we've worked really, really hard, and I think we've run a very positive campaign. We have talked about my plan, my vision, and how we as a community can work to get there. And I think that that's really important. And I think it resonates with a lot of folks. I think they're just feeling like, you know what? You're right. This time change is good.
Yeah. When's your ward convention?
Saturday.
Oh, yeah?
Thanks. You know, the good news is I have the support of my DFL, which is the young DFLers. And they're very excited about this, and they'll be there in full force working to help, you know, sway those people who haven't quite decided which way they're going. And that would be great. And I think, you know, again, at the end of the day, we are trying to talk about how to grow our community. Personalities don't really make that much difference. You know, nasty things that people want to say about you really become irrelevant. What we have is a community of really wonderful people who love where they live, because so many of them lived here forever. So if they wanted to leave, they could have left a long time ago, and they haven't. And they want a great place for their kids to grow up. Now, my daughter has a house here. All my grandkids live here. I want them to have a wonderful, wonderful place to live. I want them to have the same kind of experience I had growing up, that you can walk the streets, go to the park, walk to school, and nobody's worried about you, but everybody's watching out for you. That's what I want to see here. And right now, people are afraid. So I want to get past that fear part. And I just want that kind of organic development that comes from people feeling good about where they live. And that you can have a conversation and people can see some value in what you're saying. And then you can kind of work together to come up with a plan that really works. And I think as long as we work from the ground up, we're going to do great. It's when people come from the top down and say, this is what we're going to do to you, that's when people get upset. And I think for a lot of folks, that's how they feel about the ward at the moment. There's a lot of, nothing happens, but when it does, it comes from the top down. You know, so we really have to have that organic feel. So it is what it is. You know, I've been around the block more than once, and so I'm not looking for a new job. I have wonderful clients who have great projects that I'm working on, and we have a few special projects we're working on in the community that we'd like to kind of grow a little bit. We're working on some coffee shop ideas, and we've been working
What's
for about...
What's this place right now? What is this?
This is The Warren. It's started out as a place for artists to gather, but they have had... The Workhouse Theater, which is an Ivy Award-winning theater, has been housed here for a number of years. So it's kind of a little garage theater kind of deal. Mm. We've seat 50 to 60 people here. Cool. And they do wonderful productions, so they've been a part of this community. And it's really now our community gathering spot. When Papa's is gone, this is where everybody comes. So
there's no coffee.
There's no coffee right now, no. But we have community meetings here. Duane hosts a number of events, you know, for greyhound lovers and supporters and rescuers, to special Christmas art and crafts sales, to allowing me to use it as a headquarters. So it's a wonderful, it's a great place. When you say The Warren, people know right what you're talking about. And so it's that kind of special place in the community. You know, everybody has some kind of special place, so. That's really what it is. And we've been working for a number of years on trying to figure out how to do a food co-op here. So those are all things that are kind of on my plate anyway. So.
Sounds like you got a lot on there.
I do. But, you know, it gets me up every day, and it gives me energy. I love talking about it. I love communities. I enjoy living here. I'm glad my business was here. Certainly, we're sad that it's closed, but on the other hand, I gotta say, it has given us wonderful friendships and people who genuinely care about us and our community. So, who could ask for anything better than that?
Great. Well, that's that. On that note, well, good luck to you and your campaign. And
well, thanks for coming out and talking to me.
It was fun to explore.
Good. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Streets.mn podcast. If you have any feedback or ideas, you can comment on Streets.mn, on Twitter at StreetsMN, or you can email me at blindekey@gmail.com. So long from North Minneapolis.